check in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
All right, thank you very much, Ryan Burrow, and welcome to Friday afternoon. Here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio with the weekend just ahead. It seems like it's been a perpetual weekend this week. So Ben Meyerson's on a phone line. He is, of course, from Blue Sky in the Chicago Tribune, writes about innovation. We'll talk to him in just a second. Tom Gimbel. Ryan, are you still in the studio?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Tom Gimbel's coming by, the CEO for LaSalle Network. We're going to talk about getting by with the skeleton cast during the summer.
What?
Which is
Who
funny
does that?
You can hear the phone ringing behind Ryan. That's because he's the only one in the newsroom for the rest of the afternoon.
I got to go
back to it. Let's say hello to Ben Meyerson from the Chicago Tribune. Ben, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
So glad to be here, Steve.
Hey, so, you know, last week, right, it was last Friday when the last of the Toys R Us shut down. They did last year in business $6.5 billion. So even though they went out of business, that's a big chunk of retail that other people are looking for. And I just love to follow what Amazon's doing. They are taking a page out of the brick-and-mortar stores, right? They're putting together sort of like the old Sears wish book.
Big old holiday catalog. Apparently, this is one of the biggest and most popular things that Toys R Us did, was put out this holiday catalog full of all the hottest toys for this year.
Which is kind of funny.
It was really popular, apparently, with kids, just because, you know, they might not necessarily have access to your phone and apps and know how to scroll through, but they can look the heck through a catalog if it's sitting right in front of their face.
Yeah, it's interestingly old-fashioned, and I didn't know until I read the story that Target and Walmart still do the same thing. They still are Christmas catalogs that go out in the mail.
Yeah, everyone's angling for a piece of this Toys R Us business. You know, there's been a lot written about the downfall of Toys R Us, but a lot of people are saying that it was really more a self-inflicted wound more than anything else. If it hadn't been for that big leveraged, the big way that they were acquired and had all that debt added, they might have been really successful. They were still making a lot of revenue, and other retailers are online or otherwise are trying to get a piece of that, like you said, $6.5 billion.
Well, Ben Meyerson, I think you and I have experience with companies that are leveraged in order for takeovers. They don't always work so well.
I don't know what you're talking about, Steve.
I'm sure you don't. Okay, so the other thing, I said this earlier this week, not to repeat myself, but I was in my Whole Foods, and they encouraged me to sign up for the new Amazon Whole Foods app that I will scan when I check out to get discounts and things like that. But soon you're going to see the Amazon Christmas catalog or holiday catalog at Whole Foods.
Yeah, can't beat a printed product.
I guess not. Okay, so there's that. While we're in the grocery store, let's go to Kroger. They have plans for, I think they deliver now for about half of their stores. They have driver deliveries. But are they saying really by the end of the year, this year, that there will be driverless cars delivering Kroger groceries?
Yes, not necessarily in Chicago, but Kroger, the chain that owns Mariano's and a bunch of other grocery stores across the country, they've partnered with a Silicon Valley startup started by a couple of the guys who started Google's self-driving car program. And they have this little car called an R1 that looks kind of like a toaster. It's got no room for even a driver if you wanted to put it in there. And it holds 12 bags of groceries. And it sounds like it's going to launch in California by the end of the year.
Now, the company they're working with is Waymo, right? And Waymo was the involved in that big lawsuit with Google.
But it's actually not Waymo. It's two people that used to work for Waymo.
Okay.
They used to work for Waymo, which, again, Waymo is Google's self-driving car platform.
So
Waymo sued Uber over their self-driving car.
Are these toasters like the little toaster dump trucks? Do they drive to your stoop and then dump the groceries out of the back? Or how do you actually get them to your house or in your house?
You've got to be there, and you've got to walk up to the curb and take them out of the car yourself. So it's not 100% automated yet, but it will get you most of the way there. You order them on your app, and they'll pull up to the curb. You walk out, pick them up, and load them into your house.
And that timeline is realistic. You think that they will be doing it somewhere by the end of this year?
That's what they say. As always, you never really know how these things are going to roll out, but it sounds like if you're saying such an ambitious timeline, I think there's got to be something there. They've got the vehicle ready to go.
The problem is you have the toaster deliver your food, you miss the free samples of spreadable cheese at the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. And who knows if they're going to get the bagels right.
Tell me one more about this story. Now, you know, I'm in the travel business a little bit, and here's AAA. I thought people think that the travel agent business is dead, but AAA's put the shingle out. They're trying to hire people.
Yeah, AAA says that the business is booming for travel agents. Just because you might not necessarily see a travel agent office on every corner doesn't mean it's not there. A bunch of industry executives or spokesfolks say that a lot of the travel agent industry has just gone online like everyone else. And real people are being hired still, especially AAA. That card you've got in your wallet, they still want to help you book your trips.
I mean, there's value, the article says, in the fact that you can book. I can go to San Diego, book my own hotel room, but if I want to put together a sort of itinerary vacation with a lot of things, there's still value in getting some expertise, or at least that's what AAA is finding.
Absolutely. And who wants to dig through all the various TripAdvisor reviews and stuff like that? Certainly you could. If you've got unlimited time, you could certainly dig through there. But you could also just ask a real person and say, hey, what have you heard about this place? Is this any good? Should I be going this place or this place?
Ben Meyerson from Blue Sky Innovation, Chicago Tribune. Have a great weekend, Ben. Nice to talk with you.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Hey, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch as we sit in the Allstate Skyline studio. On a phone line now is Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, who is apparently too busy to come in and visit in person.
Hey, at least I showed up last week. Where were you?
Where was I last week? Oh, I was in Traverse City, because you know what? It's summertime and people take time off.
Oh, is that what they do?
They take time off to be with their friends and their family and all of that.
How do you run a business when you do that, Steve?
Well, that's the question. That's why you're here, I guess. But let me just tell you what's going on today in the newsroom, because Judy Pilak's on vacation. I actually had a minor, I have to make an appointment. I have to leave after the show today. We had another little scheduling snafu. So Ryan Burrow, the heavyweight.
Choose your words carefully, my friend.
I was trying to come up with something, but is kind of flying solo today. So there's a shop where he's normally got three or four people around him. Not that he needs them, because he's very good on his own. But it's summertime, and the people just aren't around. When you take that to a bigger office or in a business altogether, I would imagine that takes some planning on the part of a manager.
It does. When you bring people in and you have a company that's got, you know, numerous people, and you're trying to run a business, and especially in a growing economy like we have right now where things are busy, it's really hard to manage it. But that's part of the planning. And I think sometimes people want to say, they woe is me, but really the goal of a manager is to be prepared for any situation. And everybody knows holidays are coming up, so the best managers plan accordingly.
Well, you know, sometimes things are going to pop up too, right? So I was very fortunate. I went to my bosses yesterday and said I needed to leave early today, and they almost always say yes, which is great, but I would imagine sometimes that gets managers in trouble, too.
You can't. Oh, absolutely. And good managers, there's a difference. There's certain managers that are not skilled, and they'll say, yes, you can leave early because they're afraid of confrontation. And there's other managers that'll say no just for the sake of saying no, because they think that people shouldn't have any special perks. Neither one is the right way to manage.
They'll say no because it's easier for them.
Exactly right. Yeah. Well, maybe, or maybe they think, you know what, if I have to be here, you have to be here, or it's not fair to the other people on the team, or there's numerous reasons why. But the right managers, the best managers, they look at what people's contributions are. They look at what their attitude level is. They look at what the work level is, and they view things in a holistic way, and then they do what's right for both the company, the team, and the individual. Not always easy, and it's not always easy to say no.
Well, but sometimes
you got to do it the right way.
But sometimes you do have to. Sometimes it's just not possible, right? You do have to say no.
That's exactly right. And the fact is most people, when they accept jobs, you have to educate them on the industry. They may or may not know. But you educate them on the industry that, hey, listen, we're in a business that has to be open on holidays or weekends, or we're in a business that has to be open the day after Thanksgiving. We try to rotate it. We want to be as employee-friendly as we can. However, I want to let everybody know that this situation may arise. It's called it's communication and planning in advance and not waiting until the 11th hour.
You know, I know you must run into this because individual workers bring such different attitudes about everything in the workplace, but let's focus on time off or sick days or things like that. There are some who, you know, think it's no problem at all to cut out a few hours early because that's the environment they were raised in. And then there are others who, you know, will die of a fever rather than leave because they feel sick, because they just feel like they shouldn't be disappointing people.
That's exactly right. You know, the analogy I always tell people is, imagine if it were a holiday weekend and your babysitter said, hey, I'm leaving 2 hours early, and left your kid there.
Yeah, that'd be a problem.
It doesn't always work, and you just have to explain things to people in certain ways. Nobody wants to make somebody be miserable. Nobody wants to make somebody miss out on good times. The issue is, how is it explained? And is there empathy? There was an interesting article that I read the other day that said sometimes the people that do the most work, they're the most miserable. And not because they don't like the work, but because they always accept the responsibility.
Right.
And just because somebody will take on the grunt work or the bad shift doesn't mean you have to give it to them.
Well, that's and a I great really, point. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I have worked with people like that who always say yes. You know, and then they become almost abused because you know they're going to say yes, and then they become bitter because they always say yes.
Exactly right. And now, if there's compensation and more responsibility at better times that come as a result, then they're earning their keep. If they're getting dumped on because they're the ones that always say yes, it's really bad management, and it really sends a bad message to other workers about how they view their peers. I beat the dead horse on this thing, that I believe that the biggest problem we have in corporate America is middle management and lack of training and development. They're the unsung heroes. They do all the legwork, but they're not always developed in how to do it the right way.
Okay.
And more companies need to invest money in training of middle managers.
Let me ask you this then, because we often talk, too, about the value of putting employees in different roles. You know, you expose them to different positions to broaden their talents, and that will pay off for them and for you down the road. Is this the time to do it with a skeleton crew, or maybe not, because they wouldn't have the oversight that they might need?
Well, the interesting thing with the skeleton crew is, you know, why is it a skeleton crew? Because more people are on vacation. It's not just your company, it's other companies. So they're there to mind the ship, but there isn't always a lot going on. So when you have a skeleton crew, if senior management happens to be there, or training happens to be there, or HR happens to be there, you can actually do development during those days. Give a perk to somebody. You know, I'll tell you something that we do. So we're open on holiday or day after holidays and things like that. Like, we're open this week. And what we'll do is, and this is not even a management development, it's just a little perk. If you take the vacation day, it counts as a whole day. If you come in, we actually close early.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Tom
right?
Gimbel.
So if you're coming in, you get a little bit of an advantage.
Is that why you're already home today? Is that what the situation is?
I'm in the office. I just got meetings I couldn't get away from today.
Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
Good to be on with
you. Have a great weekend.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Ryan talking about the weather, and it certainly is lovely to look at. I wish you could all see my view. I guess you can see my view if you watch the program at WGNradio.com. That's another option. So what was your favorite summer job? I suspect maybe the question that would get more responses, what was your least favorite summer job? Because, man, we had a lot of them, but that seems to be changing. On the phone line now is Drew DeSilver, senior writer at the Pew Research Center. Drew, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
I was reading the article you wrote here, and I got to tell you, you're probably aware of this, but in Wisconsin over the winter, they actually went through a change in state law because the state of Wisconsin was having a hard time getting enough teenagers to work as lifeguards. I think their minimum wage at the time was 16. So they, as I recall, passed the state law dropping the minimum age to 15 or 14 just to increase the labor pool, so that they had kids who could work at pools around the state.
And they're not alone. There's they're now recruiting, in Austin, Texas, at least, they're recruiting senior citizens to be lifeguards because not enough teenagers are taking the jobs anymore.
And so what is it that's, well, we'll get to the cause, I guess, a little bit, but tell me about this historically, right? You could look at the numbers and see that in good times, the number of teens working went up, and bad times or shortly after recessions, they would drip down. But as recently as 2000, half teenagers were working during the summer. Now they're down to around 30%.
That's about right. Yeah, a little over a third of teenagers last summer were employed, and we're still in the middle of this summer, but so far the trends look fairly similar for this summer.
And do we know why?
We don't know why. People have a lot of theories. The theories range from school is extending later into June and starting up earlier in August. When I was a kid, we never went back to school until after Labor Day, and now a lot of places, they're starting school in mid to late August. So that would cut down on how long teenagers have to work.
You know, I was going to ask you.
Employers would say that.
I was going to ask you, though.
Just work all the summer.
I'm sorry, Drew. I interrupt you.
But I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you if the jobs might not be there because more older adults are working minimum wage jobs, but I guess that's not the case if lifeguard jobs and others are going wanting.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. I wish there were more attention to this subject. There's some evidence that elsewhere in the economy, adults have taken jobs, the kind of entry-level jobs that teenagers used to take, but there's also not as many of those kind of low-skill entry-level jobs that you could train a teenager to work in and have them work at it for 10 weeks and do pretty well at it. There are fewer of those kind of jobs around. There's also more demands on teenagers' time. A lot of teens do unpaid internships,
right,
or community service, or things, or summer school during the summer. It's just a very different environment from when you and I were kids.
That's interesting to me. So kids, younger teenagers who want to get into a college of their choice, realize now they have to gussy up their resume and their application. So rather than working at the corner fast food joint, they're volunteering at a homeless shelter or doing something like that.
I think in a lot of cases that's true.
Which is not a bad... I mean, so I'm trying to assess this, whether this is a good development or this is a bad development, and rather than do that, I'll just ask you two. Are we better off here or not?
It's hard to say because you can't really argue that, you know, the kids working at the homeless shelter or the senior center or whatever are doing a bad thing, because we certainly want people to be doing that. But on the other hand, working a paid job does teach you skills that that other things don't. You learn the importance of showing up on time. You learn how to deal with customers. You learn all sorts of things. And I guess I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's definitely a trade-off or maybe a trade of good and bad things,
yeah,
from the way things used to be.
I totally agree with you that there's such value in being in another professional sort of situation. You know, you grow up by your teen years, you can handle school or you understand what's expected and all of that. But to be where you're working with other people who are working for their livings, I just think that's a great experience, too, and a great learning one, and the sooner it comes, the better. Okay, you read in your piece, too, that what's happening here in the U.S. has been seen in other advanced economies, too. Explain that for me.
It's a trend that a lot of labor economists have seen in other industrialized countries, that there's overall, just broadly in many, many countries, fewer younger people are working than in years past, and no one really knows why. Like I said before, there have been a lot of theories. There's a lot of ideas floating around, but no one's really kind of nailed what's causing this. And it may be different things for different countries, too, because other countries, you know, their university education may extend well into their late 20s, and they may have apprenticeships or something going on. But it's definitely a trend that has people concerned.
It does have people. Well, why are people concerned?
Well, for the reasons we were talking about,
yeah,
that the later people take to enter the workforce, they have fewer years to earn money for retirement, to get themselves established in life. And you know, we don't necessarily need to have 16-year-olds working 40 hours a week, but if you're talking about people in their late 20s who still aren't working full-time jobs, that becomes a concern.
It's an interesting thing, too, that while these kids are burnishing or enhancing their resumes to get into school, what they're also doing is reducing their income as they get into school to accumulate overwhelming debt.
That is another issue. I remember when I was a teenager and I was working my summer job, I was among the reasons why I did it was to save money for college.
Yeah, I mean, we have that with our kids where we said this is the nut you've got to earn each year to contribute, and I'll let you know when they actually get there. Drew DeSilva, senior writer at Pew Research. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. If you remember back a couple weeks, the Wintrust Business Lunch talked about the dockless electric scooters in cities all around the country and how they're burdening public spaces. These startups and city departments have been working to figure out a solution, and they might have done it with the help of local favorite Spot Hero. Think about it. They've already got access to over 5,000 parking facilities, so they're confident they'll be able to provide a solution to the major business issue. But a personal issue many are facing is feeling tired and underrested at work. A report from Rand Corporation said sleep deprivation costs the U.S. $411 billion a year in economic losses. So I guess those sleep pods at Google we all made fun of years ago make a little bit more sense now. Oh, wait, they're coming? More of them are coming? Oh, I guess we could be seeing more of these pods throughout our workspaces since European mat pod companies are rolling their products to North America soon. One French model is a recovery cocoon that's ideal for 15-minute power naps. Oh, yeah, but it's $19,000. That's the kicker. So we might have to wait until those prices drop a bit before installing one on our desks. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The number of the week this week is 82, as in 82 players. You know, earlier today, France defeated Uruguay to go on to the semifinals in the World Cup. Belgium and Brazil are playing, if not right now, they're getting set in just a few minutes. So of the 736 players participating in the World Cup this year, 82 were born in countries other than the one they were playing for. You're supposed to play for your home country. FIFA requires players to be citizens of the country they play for, but the rules can be well played with. The Washington Post says a combination of ancestry, immigration, war, and even some shenanigans explains the statistics that 82 players are playing for countries other than the ones where they were born. For example, when Belgium takes the pitch, a Belgium midfielder today could have actually chosen to play for, instead of Belgium, he could have played for Kosovo, Serbia, Croatia, Albania, Turkey, or England. And that's this week's number of the week.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And the weekend is dead ahead, and that means we need to figure out what we're going to be doing. It seems like we just got rid of a weekend, but I guess that was a midweek holiday. Front Row Phyllis is on a phone line to help us make our plans. Phyllis, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, and I'm rooting for Ribfest because they've had a rough run so far.
I know, with the rain, right?
The rain and the storms, that the fireworks, I think they had them last night instead of the 4th, and it's
right.
Kind of a mess.
But right. But
are they going through the weekend?
Yeah, they are going through the weekend. So tonight is country all night. So you've got superstars such as Jake Owens going to be there, Chris Jansen, along with Jordan Davis. So it's going to be a great night. The weather's beautiful, so you definitely want to head over there. Tomorrow evening is Steven Tyler. Now, we know him in a different setting. He's actually going to be performing with his The Loving Mary Band, which is his band. It's kind of a cross between a kind of like folk country.
Yeah.
So you definitely want to check it out. Yeah.
So no walk. There'll be no walk this way?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so. He might be walking that way, but I don't think I'm singing it.
I don't think he can help it. Okay, well, we'll see if he stops for some rib. Have you ever been to Ribfest?
I have. I was there actually the other night. So, yeah, it's been it's crazy. And then we have more ribs to talk about, right? There's a smokeout next week.
And that's right off of the Kennedy, right? Where is that?
That is. Okay. That is right off of. So it is at Grand Avenue near the Chicago River, kind of adjacent to East Bank Club.
Right.
So it's right over there.
It's kind of fun if you drive by because you can be on the expressway and actually catch the smoke, the waft of the aroma.
Right. And you can hear the great country music because I have to tell you, it is 3 days. July 13th through the 15th, over, you know, 20 of the world's best hit masters are going to be there, and the top country artists are going to be there. Brett Young is there, Brett Eldridge, Brothers Osborne, Kane Brown, and so many more. So you definitely want to check it out.
All right, and that's coming up next weekend, right? That's not this weekend.
Yeah, that's next weekend.
You know, next weekend too, right, there's one of the concerts at Wrigley. I think it's Jimmy Buffett.
I would rather.
I've seen Jimmy Buffett. You know, I get people love him, and I like his music and everything. I would go to this concert to see the opening act.
Right, to see Boz Skaggs.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. I've never seen Boz Skaggs. I've seen him. I met him. He was at the station many, many years ago, but I've never seen him perform.
Yeah, it's going to be, I know, a lot of people, I think, are jumping on that. His jam band fans are so ecstatic to see him perform, especially at Wrigley. I mean, it's a whole different dynamic when you're performing there.
Right.
So it's going to be pretty exciting. And, you know, Jimmy Buffett was just here, I think, was it November, December, when he was here rolling out the Escape to from Margaritaville.
So
he's got a real, you know, fix for Chicago. He really loves Chicago and Chicago. And so
let me ask you this, Phyllis. Do they still have Taste of Chicago?
They do still have Taste of Chicago, but they threw us all for a you know, when they moved it, remember, it used to be right around the Fork.
Right.
And then they moved it because they realized they were competing with so many other festivals. So it's now kicking off on the 11th, which is on Wednesday, and it goes from the 11th through the 15th. Of course, admission is free. There's two incredible, great music stages that go all day and all night. And Goose Island stage is kind of cool because that stage features some of the best of Chicago's local talent. So you get a chance to see some of these local up-and-coming artists. And then the Petrillo is going to have Brandi Carlile there, Black Star, the Flaming Lips, and it's just going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Is your favorite the Flaming Lips, or who's your favorite there?
The Flaming Lips. Actually, Brandi Carlile is my favorite.
I like
I'm
her,
pretty
too.
Excited.
I do, too. Okay, yeah. So find more information at frontrowphyllis.com, right?
Right, absolutely.
Have a great weekend. Not too many ribs, okay, Phyllis?
You got it.